Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Great to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours. Gonna hear it in person in just a little while.
Very soon, a couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to it.
I know. Well, I will tell you that we have had some, a weather that was not of my choosing. And I found out why. And, I could have known this, but I didn't, that along the coast, June is not usually a very happy weather month. It's called June gloom.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I know you lived along the coast too, and you didn't know that either, did you?
Well, I didn't know. See? It extended that far north.
Oh, all the way, apparently. All the way up and down. And so today, everything burns through with such outrageous beauty that it's just absolutely breathtaking. So my gratitude is absolutely inexpressible.
Great. Great. I'm glad
to
hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And you are breaking up just
you?
A little bit for me.
No.
I don't know if it's my phone or
Nabbit.
But, it's getting better. The more you talk, that's good. That's good.
Okay.
We'll just go with it for now.
Yeah. Good. Good. All right. We'll see. And if I need to call back in, I know you'll let me know.
Yeah. Well, that was 100% perfect. So that's good to hear.
Good. 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 You're doing well?
Yes. We are in day two of a prolonged heat wave that's projected.
Oh, no.
On the East Coast for, 100 million people or something. I'm doing okay.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Ouch, huh?
Yeah, big one.
Gosh. Gosh. Do people have power? I'm a little out of touch. We're on retreat, you know. Do people have power? And yeah, okay.
I think so, yeah. Sorry, there's been a little bit
for
of
thunderstorm
and stuff. But, heat and humidity on the East Coast. So,
yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, we'll be thinking of you. Hoping, sending you cool, dry, energy.
Yes, and we'll send the warm energy to you. How about that?
Yeah, not today, but we'll let you know.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Very good. And for our announcement, we have this. Our Reflective Listening Buddies program offers awareness practitioners unique support. It requires participants to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. A new quarter of this popular program begins July 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and as you've just told us, the Summer of Sangha has begun. Our spiritual home at 4 Acres Zen Center in gorgeous Squim, Washington, is hosting week-long and weekend retreats offering yoga, meditation, guidance, and workshops. In addition, it will be possible to accept the precepts with this practice during the summer offerings. There are still openings.
In the weekends, right? In the weekends. That's there are some spaces in the weekends. That's it.
Oh, okay. So not in the week-long retreat starting June 30.
Okay. Oh, no. No. Full to capacity. Blessedly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So weekend retreats in July and August.
Yeah. We had some cancellations, but they filled right up. So we're happily full.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to see it. Yes. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show. And conversation on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Shall we get started?
Yeah, might as well. We're here.
All right, let's do it. first caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Stefania.
Hey, Stefania.
Following up from this morning conversation to call back.
So,
the concept of love, meaning, in particular, I was thinking about love in the family, you know, mother, kids, and such.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm confused in many ways. I'm not sure if I love my family of origin, I would say. It seems like easier with the kids, but sometimes I'm not even sure if I love my kids, even if I care for them and I wish them all the best. And I just want a way to help me understand what I'm looking for. I don't even know what I'm looking for.
Uh-huh. Well, nor do I, but we can certainly explore it, right? Because one of the things that I think has happened to most of us is that we have so much conditioning in every kind of relationship, right? So you mentioned your mother. So how should you be toward your mother? And, of course, there's how you were when you were a little tiny kid, and then that changed as you got older, and you became a teenager, and then you went on your own, and then your mother's now you're a grown woman with children of your own, and your mother is getting old. And so what are we talking about here, right? And then there's romantic love, and then there's love for your children. And as you say, you know, when they're little and they're so adorable and so wonderful. But then you can kind of get to the place where we call it, of course, an opportunity, right? And it really challenges all the ideas that we have about how we should feel. So if I love my children, then I should just love them completely, unreservedly, all the time. And yet I find myself getting frustrated or impatient or whatever that is, right?
Yes.
And in addition, Stefania, I think many of us have conditioning that says, and those people should be in a whole different category of love from friends, say, or from neighbors or other people in the community or the world at large. So all of these different sort of rules that we have and ideas that we have about what love is and how we should feel about it and that sort of thing. Is that kind of kind of where you are?
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yes. And also compared to other people that I know who feels like so close to their family, they cannot just stay away from them or you know, like they need to call them all the time or whatever. So there's a lot of comparison in within myself and compared to other people, which I know comparison is a hint, right?
that's just a quick trip to suffering, isn't it? But what you're noticing is really interesting, right? So some people, their families are their favorite people in life, and they spend all their time with them, and they're on the phone with them all the time, and they're just their best people. Other people, I was telling somebody the other day, you know, a lot of people in our practice started out on the East Coast, which is where their families are, and they wound up out here because that's as far away from their family as they can get and stay in the same country.
Yeah.
So it seems like there is no one way with this, as we could say there's no one way with anything. I can't imagine anything that we would get everybody to agree upon, except maybe that we will probably never get everybody to agree upon anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so then that leaves you, I hear, in a place of, well, then what do I do with this, right? How do I make peace with how I am with this?
Yes.
Is that it?
Or try to understand how to be more in some way responsible. That's the thing that is triggering me. Like, I'm lucky. I live in America. My family is in Italy. And my sister are helping with my mom. And my mom is very independent in many ways. But she needs some help because she's, you know, almost 90, but very independent in many, many ways. And I feel like...
Stefania, they're both in Italy?
Correct. Yes, they're all three in Italy.
Okay, got it.
My sister and my mom. And so, basically, I feel like I know I'm lucky because they are taking care of her and she needs, I would say, very little physically, actually almost nothing physically, and just emotional, but she's also living alone. So, I mean, we are all very, very lucky. But then I feel like I should, you know, there's a lot of should, and I have to be the good sister that helped the sister, but they don't ask for anything, and so I offer help, and they feel like, you know, no, thank you, but not with rancor or, sorry, with criticism most of the time. It's just, I feel like, you know, it's okay, we don't need it, and so I feel like
we're fine.
And
that's hard for you to accept.
I accept it, but I'm afraid if I'm just too comfortable in the fact that they don't need me, and so I can offer my help, but I don't need to push it, because when I push it, they feel obliged. Like my mom feel like, well, I don't really want to go on a trip with you for 2 days because I have my issues here and I don't want to. And so I feel like, should I take offense that she doesn't want to spend time with me? Does she ever love me? You know what I mean? All this idea, maybe she doesn't care anymore because I left. I don't know. And I, at the same time, I feel like, and it's fine. So that's a mixed feeling of feeling I'm fine because they don't need me. And at the same time, should I actually give
well,
more?
Well, you know, Stefania, you've used several words in this description that I think are really important for us to explore, right? Mm. The first one being, of course, should.
Yeah.
And the second one being, I'm afraid. Well, that's a couple of words, but yeah. So fear and shoulds. So what I hear in what you're describing is there is no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your mother's fine. Your sister's fine. Nobody's upset with you. Nobody is asking you for anything. You offer, they say, we don't need anything. Everybody's fine. But there's a voice in your head, that doesn't want to have you be okay with that. So then there's the second guessing and the question, well, but what about this and what about that? And, yeah, but does that mean that? But wouldn't they? And,
yes. And the thing is, though, I guess the voice is saying, am I part of the family? So that's to go back to the initial question is, do they care about me? Or do they feel like I don't care about anyone because I'm not making an extra effort to try to guess what they need or want?
Let me ask you this. Do you ever ask them?
Yeah, I did.
And they say...
They say, Ma, figure it out. We don't know. Something like that.
Okay, so if you said to your sister, do you feel like I don't love you because I'm here and you're there?
I have not asked that, but in our family, that's the other thing, that we don't say much about I love you or thank you or please give me this or that, you know. There's also this... I was explaining to my husband the other day, we hardly use the word thank you or please. It was just normal thing. You know, you need some salt on the table. I remember I have an issue with a person. May I have the salt? We didn't say, may I have the salt, please. We would just say in a normal voice, may I have the salt? And hear the salt instead of, you know, thank you and please. So it's also that basically, yes, I'm not sure if I should feel like they don't care about me because they don't ask me anything, or it's just their ego, probably definitely is, or if it's too easy for me to say, well, they didn't ask, they probably don't need anything, I'm good.
Well, I know that it's difficult for us to be in that place because of that incessant – second guessing in the head. Right? Yeah. But if that voice in your head dropped this topic,
mm-hmm.
would you have any problems?
No. As I said, I'm very lucky, I know. So,
well,
yeah.
Yeah, I would suggest that you will be really lucky when you drop that voice in the head.
Yes.
Right? Because otherwise that voice in the head is using your good fortune against you.
Yes. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So drop the voice and say to the voice, thank you, but no, thank you. I don't need to.
That's right. That's right. I am not interested in solving problems that I don't have.
Yes.
If somebody tells me I have a problem, then I will explore that with them and we'll see where we get to. But nobody's saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to accept that nobody's saying anything because there's nothing that they want to say. And if they're not saying anything, you certainly don't need to be getting all of this upsetting questioning from a voice inside your head who we know is there primarily to upset us.
Yes. 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 Thank you. Yes. I will.
You are so welcome.
I will listen to this again, but yes, I will do that. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Stefania.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Stefania. And Sherry, I was just struck by what a meaning-making machine conditioning is. And, you know, I've suffered, of course, in exactly those same ways. Yeah.
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah.
Yes.
Because we're so conditioned to believe that, in quotes, reality that the voices are creating for us is real, is true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's not.
Indeed. And it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another call here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Gabriel.
Oh, hello, Gabriel.
Hi. Okay. Well, what I'm looking at, Sherry, is probably very similar to the previous caller, but different in content. It's the difference between everything is unfolding magically on its own, or I have to grab the bull by the horns and make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dilemma. And I noticed these dualities with conditioning. They're kind of like all different in content, but the same in process. And I am so clear on it. But it doesn't let go.
No, it doesn't let go, Gabriel. We have to cut it loose. Right? It's never going to let go because duality is ego. And it's not like ego uses duality. Ego is fear, ego is duality. That's what it is, that's what it does. Okay, now it's all an illusion, and that last conversation was perfect in that, right? So it creates this world of problems and situations and relationships, and it's all imaginary. None of it's happening here, none of it's happening now. It's just all made up in my mind. And it presents that, and I believe that is true and real, and that my life is happening in relation to that. But it's not. And what you laid out very clearly was, you can either be with life unfolding, and in life unfolding, there is no duality, because life unfolding is simply what it is as it unfolds. And then ego comes in and says, well, but what about? I mean, what are you going to do about that, Gabriel? What if life doesn't unfold that? You better make sure, if that's what you want, that you make that happen. And there we are.
Yeah. It's so clear. And when you say it, it's so clear right now. And I love right now. But yes. Well, the but is the duality, isn't it?
It is. It absolutely is. And because, again, we're so conditioned to believe that imaginary world in the head is real and that it's our world, right? Now, it is our world in the sense that we believe the fabrication that ego has created for us, the interpretations and the projections and the assessments. We believe all that. We've been conditioned to believe that it's true and real, right? And so our knee-jerk is to go with that. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to say, Gabriel, if you don't take charge of your life, you're never going to get what you want. Okay? It doesn't have to. It's got, all it has to do is just dangle this thing in front of you that you want, and you're meant to do all the interpreting and all of the figuring and all of the planning and all of the tensed muscles and all of the agonizing to get whatever that is.
Hmm. So, okay. Super clear. I get it. I was on a reflective listening call the other day, and I was walking through a street in New York City, and a voice was telling me that what kind of person takes a reflective listening call through a noisy street? It's so inconsiderate of your buddy, et cetera, et cetera. But circumstances made it so that that was kind of like what kind of happened. And that voice telling me that doesn't really care that I am being considerate. It just wants to yell at me. But then I'm trying to find out. Yeah, I get that. But I'm pretty clear now. There's something else, which I think is the mentor or the practitioner or something that I'm more interested in than the voices. I don't care about the voices. They're boring. But I want to hear what that deeper part of me is telling me, and I have a hard time hearing it.
Well, here's just a place to look, okay?
Okay.
Just a place to look. So you're on a reflective listening buddy's call, and you're on a noisy street in New York City. And there is an intuitive sensing. The intelligence that animates you knows that this is not the best situation.
Right.
No judgment. No, you screwed up again, Gabriel. Here you are. Right. None of that. Just this is not the best environment for this. Okay. And then the ego voice comes in with, yeah. What is the matter with you? That you've always been inconsiderate. You're so egocentric. You don't really, boom, big rant, right? Until you're meant to feel awful over simple information that the intelligence that animates you provided. So the one we always kid people with, anybody who's been to the monastery, been on retreat, right? You get a note. Right? And the note is just always absolutely neutral. Please don't wear those shoes. Pardon me?
Please wear clean socks. I got that one once.
Yeah, that's right. Please wear clean socks in the meditation hall. It's not you're a fool, you're a pig, you're stupid, you're rude, you don't care about it. None of that. But that's what ego turns it into in a second. Right? And so in that same way, life is constantly giving us course corrections, not to punish us or make us feel bad, but to help us see how life works easiest, what takes best care of us.
When you characterize...
That happens first. The last of that sentence, Gabriel, is just, that comes first, and then the pile on from ego.
Yeah. When you characterize ego and its pylon, it sounds like my mother. And then
yes.
Right. So there's that part of the daily recollection where you're not to extol oneself and slander others, and I'm now hearing that I'm slandering my mother. That's ego again.
Of course. And that's right. And where we could go with this is, that's the voice of my mother. Well, yeah, because that's a big part of how you were conditioned, right? If there was a father around, you'd have a father voice in your head who was, you know, or a teacher voice or a whoever it was who was passing along, as it gets passed along generation to generation, this kind of egocentric, punishing information. So your mother was, she was conditioned that way. Her mother was conditioned that way. And when your mother had children, guess what? In that completely unconscious way that we do to our children what was done to us.
It makes perfect sense. So we can't, it's not going to let us go. We have to cut it loose.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And it's not. Say that again, Gabriel.
Do you have an analogy that drops in for letting go versus cutting loose?
Yes. Yeah. And so your mother's still alive, right?
Yeah.
So you have a relationship with your mother. So you could
I love her dearly. I have a great relationship with her. She's still doing all that stuff, by the way.
And she, then you just answered your own question. Yeah, except you don't have to have a loving relationship with ego. You just learn to ignore it. You don't have to hate it. You don't have to, you don't have to anything. You just learn to ignore it in the same way that you learn to ignore those kinds of messages when your mother says them. And you just go right back to being the loving you that you are. So ego comes at you with this stuff. You see it. You just, whatever, and let it slide off. Until the relationship with it is such that it actually can no longer reach you. You give it so little attention that it just withers away. It only survives because we attend to it. If we never looked at it again, it would cease to exist.
I think I'm doing pretty well. Thank you. That's very helpful. Everything you say sounds like something that the intelligence that animates already know. And I'm coming to swim in August.
Yes. 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 And we're going to reinforce all of this. But
I
yes, you and Gabriel, one of the things that people are saying here this week on retreat, periodically, is exactly, I know this stuff. I know this, right? I know this. I could say this to somebody else. And then I'm in the trenches, and it's like, it just all goes away. And I'm 6 years old, and I'm ego is my mother, and I've lost complete consciousness, and I'm just miserable. And that's what practice is. So we recognize that. We get back.
I find it fun, getting caught and getting out. And I don't know why I find it fun, but I do.
Well, that is an excellent approach, and that is a much faster way out. Yeah. See it as a puzzle. Yeah, see it as a puzzle or a, whatever it is that you're finding your way through it and finding your way out of it. And every time you get caught, it's just an opportunity to get loose. And every time you get loose, you just laugh and celebrate the fact that that happened and here you are.
It's also a full-time job, which I love because I don't like downtime. So I love that about it.
It is relentless. Yes. And what will replace it, though, is the joy of just being in life in this moment as it's unfolding, being here for it, the astonishment of the creativity and the beauty of life is as fulfilling, even more fulfilling, than the excitement of sort of being in Dharma combat with ego.
Yeah, I've been experiencing a lot of that, and that's all thanks to practice.
We're lucky.
It just feels like magic.
Yes, it does. And it is.
Yeah.
That's why it feels that way. All right. Thank you, Gabriel.
See you soon.
Take care. Go happy. See you soon.
You too. Go happy.
Go happy. Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. That was fascinating, Sherry. And it's time for our good news update.
So all right.
Update, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Wonderful. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. And Jen, I'm turning it over to you for a good news update.
Great. Thanks, Michael. And I'm pleased to be joined by Ramita, who is here to speak with us about her experience of continuing to work with a mentor to the rescue process. Welcome, Ramita.
Thanks, Jen. Happy to be here.
So we had that. Yeah, thanks for being here. We had that fabulous workshop a few weekends ago, Mentor to the Rescue, and you have been continuing to work with that process.
Yes.
More about that.
It's been Mentor to the Rescue says so much. After the New Year's retreat, I got in touch with a karmic knot that I've talked a little bit about on calls. It's all up to me and I can't do it. And that has interfered with my ability. Well, it's interfered with my practice of recording and listening, and conditioning gets in there and uses inadequacy in all sorts of different ways to control attention and to take away my joy. And I found that with this workshop, it gave me an additional tool, I guess more precise instruction on exactly how to use the recorder and access the mentor to do things that I want to do that conditioning has been keeping out of reach.
Wow, how fabulous. So things that it's using this, it's all up to you, but you can't do it process. You've been able to apply the Mentor to the Rescue tool to being able to break that down. Because, one of those things I think we really looked at in that workshop, and it's very much what you're describing, is conditioning tends to throw things at us that are big and vague. And the sense of, how in the world am I going to approach that? And so you've been using the Mentor to the Rescue tool to really break it down.
Yeah, yeah. And for those of us who didn't make the workshop, just briefly go over what was entailed. The process is very simple, starting with a question, how am I stopped from doing a task? And doing some recording, making notes, whatever. Just letting all of the stuff come up that gets in the way. And in my case, I can't, or it's too big of a job, or I don't know how to, or I don't want to make the time. It's not a priority. And, of course, all of these are distracting me and keeping me from doing the task. So getting clear about that is the first step. What messages am I hearing that keeps attention on not doing the task? And my goodness, right there, it's a world.
I was just going to say, and a world of clarity as well. Because just that, quote, just that piece right there is huge, isn't it? To realize, it's no wonder nothing's actually happening on this front, because all of the energy and attention is going into the conversation about it. So that's the first step, is really seeing that.
Yeah, and that it makes it clear. Already the compassion starts coming up. It's like, I'm dealing with all of these messages, I'm not surprised. It pushes self-hate off onto out of the way, and says, I can take these one at a time and talk with the mentor about them, which is the next step. Listening to what the mentor has to say about these things, and I start then getting the clarity, the compassion, what's true about me and my abilities, the fact that I've done a lot of challenging things and been successful in different tasks that I've chosen, big ones and small ones. And with the mentor, I start to shift out of that world of illusion of I can't and it's all up to me, and get in touch with what's true about the situation, and then finding out the smallest little step that I can take in the direction of the task.
Yeah, isn't that brilliant? So again, turning to what's actually true, turning to the mentor, and beginning to get that clarity, that compassion, and that replaces the self-hatred, which is only meant to keep us in the cul-de-sac of nothing ever happening, right? Because you've got to stay there so we can keep beating you about that. So, right, with the clarity, you're turning to that clarity, to that compassion, and then that was my favorite part, is, and then looking at what's the smallest little step that I can take towards this mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you an example.
Please.
I've heard, forever people saying, oh, I'm going to listen to this over and over again, taking a clip from Open Air or from the year-long retreat calls. And I wanted to figure out, I wanted to be able to take those clips that I found important guidance and to extract them from the recording and put them somewhere I could access them. And I didn't know how to do that. The technology, how do I, I know how to download things, but then how do I get them into an editing right. program? And right. it's stopped me for years. And even with this process, I would get to a certain point with the mentor, and then I would get distracted. The distraction, something else would come up. It would take, quote unquote, it was taking too long, which is another bamboozle, and I'd put it aside. And that was part of permission too. I don't have to get it all done now. So I learned to celebrate the small increments. It's the process I'm celebrating, not necessarily achieving the outcome.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's so good. Ramita, it's so good. Because one of the other things I think that was so revolutionary about that workshop, and it's exactly what you're describing, is the clarity that, okay, yes, maybe there's a, quote, outcome in this case, taking clips that you really like and putting them all together in a place where you can find them. Okay, yeah, that's an outcome. Or on the workshop, people talked about, I want to clean out my closets, right? But to recognize that along the way, there are many, small or maybe in some cases not so small steps. And so one of the things that I found so beautiful about it and relaxing is to allow myself the space to be on that step. So, I imagine there's many, many steps for you between what you, knew at the time about technology and how to do that to whatever that final outcome would be. And, there you are doing it, and the voice wants to say, this is taking too long. Why is it able to say that? Well, because all of your attention is supposed to be on that end result. But if you're sitting down only to accomplish spending 5 minutes to Google, editing audio programs, there, you've accomplished that. Boom. Done.
Yes, yes. And to celebrate that, I'm here.
Exactly.
And that I'm not letting conditioning do to me what it is trying to do. It's me and the mentor. We're aligned here. That's when that one's on the outside. And so I try, I had a sewing project, and I was able to work. It worked beautifully with that. Again, giving myself as much time as was needed, letting go of the outcome and enjoying the process, which, I enjoy sewing. But when it gets into this process of what conditioning does to me when I try to do something I love, it turns it into suffering. And to have these successes, then it starts translating into other ways. Even if I'm not going through the stepwise process with recording and listening with a mentor, I'm hearing the mentor's voice when I start to do something or I confront something I don't understand or I don't know how to, I have access to the wisdom, love, and compassion of the mentor that buffers me from the nonsense of that illusion.
So the training is really paying off. I mean, that's what you're describing, right? The training process. Because, and it's exactly, it's so great, Ramita. So what you're realizing, you're getting to experience is, it's not about the outcome. I'm trying to think, there was a beautiful Sherry Huber quote that came through on Peace Quotes just the other day that was basically pointing at that exact thing. There's no such, I mean, outcome, what is that, right? We're always in process. And so you get to actually live in process. And when you're living in process, you get to be here with this now. And as you train with that, that process of being here with this now starts to show up everywhere, because that's how you're living your whole life.
Yes. Yes. And that's where the rescue is. You know, I'm being rescued moment by moment, and practicing turning attention from the habitual conversation to truth, to caring for myself, to acknowledging adequacy, and it's more and more available. And it the rescue feels, I mean, it's tangible. It's like, yeah, and fun. I've got this you know, our assignment this week too, talking about the friendliness. You know, I can always expect that friendly support from the mentor, that unconditional love.
Yes. Rescued from that ugly loop of self-hate that's only designed for misery, that you get pulled up out of that. Well, Ramita, thank you for being with us today to talk about it. I know we're hoping to, it was very popular, and we're hoping to find a way to keep that process alive and get to present it to other folks who may not have had the opportunity. So thank you for being with us today to talk about your experience of it.
Thank you for having me, Jen.
All right. Kesho. And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Ramita. And welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And that was brilliant, Sherry.
Oh, wasn't that good?
Yeah.
Oh, talk about inspiring.
Yeah, process of being here now for this. Sounds like a life recipe.
Yeah. Whatever this is, going to be fine. Because we got our buddy with us. We got the friend with us. Unconditional love. What could we not face with unconditional love at our side and filling us and overflowing?
Yes. Yeah, we can face everything with unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello. My name is Raimi. I've got a question. I've been reading Be the Person You Want to Find. And towards the end of the book, there's a section about if you somehow come to the conclusion that your partner doesn't love you or doesn't respect you, it's the voice of conditioning. And when I read that, it kind of scared me a little, because I feel like there must be times where the person you have a relationship with really doesn't like you and does not treat you well. And I wanted
Ray?
To ask.
Yeah, I confess it's been a long time since I've read that book.
okay.
Yeah, but that just doesn't sound like something I would say.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that it's so black and white. You know, it's such a just a statement of that's always going to be conditioning. Now, the reason I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have said it that way is that I personally know a lot of people in abusive who have been or even are in really abusive relationships.
Yes.
And so I would just never encourage somebody to believe that that's all in their head and that ego is just making it up and that there's nothing going on with their partner. Because, you know, in the conversation that we had a little bit ago, we were talking about, you know, getting to the point where you don't even like your own kids. Now,
yeah.
Hopefully it's temporary, yeah. Right? It's a passing phase. But certainly in every relationship, most of us know the place where we don't like the other person, and it's pretty obvious they don't like us. And if we're going to stay in the relationship, we move through that and work with whatever is going on with us and like that. But sometimes there are relationships that it really behooves us to end.
Yes. Yeah, I think my ego or conditioning misinterpreted this section.
Would like you to believe that, right?
Yes,
would like
yeah.
you to believe that if there's something in your relationship, well, it's all you, and basically it's all your fault. And
exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those ego voices specialize in that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My question, though, was if there's an easy way or any way to recognize whether conditioning is tricking us into these assumptions or expecting the other person to change and like me more, or whether it's actually an unappreciative person or we're in a abusive or unhealthy relationship with someone.
Right. Well, and first of all, is there an easy... No, not that I know of. I wish I did, and I would tell you. No. The thing that is so helpful in any relationship, it doesn't matter whether it's an intimate partner relationship or another family member or friend or coworker or anything, is that they act as a mirror for us, right? And mm-hmm. So we, in this practice, as you may or may not know, are really big on projection. Right? To,
yes.
The importance of following everything that I think and believe is happening with somebody else back to the source of it, which is always going to be me. And it's for that reason that ending self-hatred is the foundation of our practice. It is the first step. And it doesn't mean that we don't stay on the first step for a long, long time. But it is the foundation. That's the first thing we have to focus on, because otherwise that conditioning is just going to use every awareness against us. So you're in this relationship and you think your partner is treating you badly, is kind of being mean to you. And yeah. And so you think, okay, well, that's a projection. So if I were being that way, I would be coming from a mean place. Okay, now does that mean mm-hmm. that's true for the other person? No, not necessarily. But where self-hate would jump in there is, yeah, it's all you. It's not your partner. It's you. You're mean, and you're just projecting that onto somebody else. Right?
Yeah.
So the whole process is one that we're just kind of untying the knots. All of these things that we've been taught to believe, all the conditioned assumptions, and we're just looking at them, just seeing, attempting to see what it is for what it is, so that we can get through it to a place of greater clarity.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Well, and that said, I am not a person who believes that there's anything magical about relationships, any of them.
Okay.
And that there's any reason for anybody to be in a relationship or not to be in a relationship. Because as we would like to say, you know, there's karma in everything. There's karma if you stay, there's karma if you go. So, you know, it's not like we're ever going to escape anything. So if you leave and then you realize, oh my God, I've been in the last three relationships, I've been the same person in every, I should have stayed in that first one. No, that's just self-hatred, right? So no shoulds, no self-hate. You know, we're just doing the best we can, trying to get our eyes as wide open as we can get them, see what we see, be as kind as we can be, learn what we can learn.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a good approach, I think.
Whatever else happens, choose kindness for you and to the best of your ability for everybody else, and you're not going to go too far afield.
Thank you. Yeah.
And don't be a stranger. Let us know how it goes, okay?
Okay.
All right, good. Thank you, Raimi.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Raimi. And Sherry, I think we have time for at least one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Sequoia calling from California.
Oh, hello, Sequoia. Yeah.
Hello.
What the heck is going on?
Well, it kind of seems to be family night on the radio show, but I'd like to look at a process. I'm going to call it cinching down the armor.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't know that the armor ever gets taken off, but sometimes it, you know. So I am going to be in the company of my brothers and sisters this weekend, which is something that rarely happens, all of them all at once, because I have a number of
them. You've got a bunch of them, if I remember correctly.
I've got some and more to spare. So, I have seven of them. So, and they're going to be there with their families and things like that. So, I'm noticing, you know, the armor is getting cinched down. It is not like, it's like this attitude of going to be with people that don't get me. You know, that I need to protect myself. They probably think I'm weird and all of this. And it's,
you need to get these judgments in place
before
they have a chance to judge you, right?
Exactly. And I see that this is not just, this is also going on at a part-time job I have. Very kind people. And I continue to cinch down the armor around them and you know, focus on everything they're doing incorrectly. So it leaves Sequoia, who really would love to be, would love to be living in the world as an unconditionally loving witness, leaves her in a place of isolation and loneliness.
Which just is, suits ego to a T, doesn't it?
It is made to order.
And so one of the things that occurs to me is that you have some pretty good facilitation skills at your disposal. Right?
Yes, this is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that you could take them to the reunion and to work.
Yes. This is the this is the challenge. Oftentimes the awareness, the facilitation skills comes to the forefront after the unawareness has already slipped out. You know, after the unfortunate thing has been said, or the advice has been given, or and so on and so forth. And then there's Yeah.
So you get set up to do the thing you don't want to do, and then you get beaten up for that. And, of course, the only way to prevent that, since you are obviously out of control, is to keep you home alone, isolated, and save people from your unfortunateness.
Wow. That about describes it.
Yeah.
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 So,
yeah.
You know, maybe the place for those facilitation skills is the companion who wants to go with you. First of all, you know, you could invite it to stay home. It won't. But you could invite it to stay home alone while you go. But also to do some of that facilitation to help yourself realize that ego is projecting. That it's projecting onto you, onto other people. It's not what you want.
Yeah.
It's not how you are.
Right. It's not how
right?
I am. It's not. Yeah.
And then by the time it does that enough, you start believing that you did those things and said those things and behaved in that way that it's accusing you of.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Is this possible? Sometimes it seems like people do get, they do get the authenticity. And
yes.
And I am not getting to have the pleasure of that. Let's see. I'm not getting to have the pleasure of that being
That's
in
right.
that authentic place.
That's right. You don't get to have the pleasure of being you, because that's being taken away by ego. Other people know it. Other people see it. But you don't get to. So that's why those facilitation skills could be helpful. So every time a voice in your head talks to you, facilitate it. So what you're projecting is, so what you're projecting onto me is, and I would start every sentence with, so what you're projecting. So that you don't lose sight of the fact that that's what's going on. That conversation in the head, accusing others, accusing you, those are all ego projections.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and you know the other thing, of course you know this, but I'm going to remind you anyway, to set an alarm, even though you're going to be in that place, and you know, here's a little ego freak out and say, that's a lie, that's not true. So the alarm goes off and you say, I need to take something. So excuse me just a moment, I'll be right back. Okay. Now they can think you're taking a pill, but what you're doing is taking a break so that you can check in and come back to center and this, you know, and they'll try to talk you out of doing that, but I hope you will do it, because the more breaks you have, the greater are your chances of not just being pulled under and kept under and only allowed to pop up in order to receive the beatings after the whole thing is over.
Okay. It's just really throwing a wrench into the system for a second and reset. Okay.
Yeah. And you could have a little something written down that you have in your pocket that you read to yourself. You know, I want to be here with these people, not off in a, you know, with ego or it is. I choose unconditional love and authenticity, you know, and then go back in and set that alarm for a little bit while later. I mean, they may think, oh, my God, the poor thing is terminal. You know, every 20 minutes she has to go take a pill.
She's got a really bad bladder, really.
Yeah, exactly. Try to be with a different person every time it happens, and they won't catch on until afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, but who cares? You know, really, let people think whatever they think. At least you will be having closer to the experience that you want to have, and you'll be far more aware that they are able to see the real you and you'll get a chance to see the real you.
Cool. I love it, and I love it. I'm so grateful that I was able to get on, and like everybody else says, I'm going to take this with me, and I have this is an incredible gift to take this recording with me and be able to listen to it
before you go, listen to it as you're arriving, listen to it in the middle of it, every time you run to the bathroom, listen to the recording,
just even listening to a sentence or two is going to, pull
that's
me
right.
back.
That's so. Exactly it. Yep. Okay. Help you stay here.
All right.
Yeah. All right, and again, you too, stay, let us know how it goes, because...
Okay, I definitely will. All right.
All right, thanks, Sequoia.
Thank you. Gosho.
Go happy. Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Sequoia. And Sherry, I was really getting it that I'm here to save the one human being who's suffering I know the most.
That's exactly
That's what I'm here
That
for.
Is exactly it. That's right. Yeah, and it's the best we can do for everybody else, too. So it's not it's selfish, right? It's actually quite generous. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's incredibly inspiring and motivating to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Michael.
Thank you, and thank everyone, and go happy.
Go happy.